I'm Dani Shapiro, and this is The Way We Live Now. Today is day 91, since we've forgotten what a belt is, and day 41 of this podcast. I've been thinking a lot about where people were in their lives when the pandemic struck. Some of us were ill, undergoing treatment. Others in the middle of breakups or divorce. Others were grieving losses that had nothing to do with COVID. And then there were those with extreme chronic illnesses. How were they coping? And what might we learn from their resilience? My guest today is Kimberly Warner, a documentary filmmaker who is dealing with a profoundly unsettling chronic illness. Kimberly was in the midst of making her documentary, Unfixed, when she had to shift gears and make her film in an altogether different way. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining me to talk about The Way We Live Now.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just thrilled to be able to share a little bit of time with you, Dani.
Well, same here. Describe your surroundings to us. Where are we finding you? What do you see around you as we're speaking?
Well, in this exact moment, I'm in a parking lot in a small rural town in Oregon. It's about 10 miles down the road from where my husband and I live, which doesn't have really good Wi-Fi. So I thought I'd probably be better off coming down to our veterinarian's parking lot to have a clear conversation with you. But even though it sounds a little dismal, I actually am looking right at a giant sequoia right in front of me, and then a grove of at least 100-year-old Doug firs off to my left. There are azaleas and blooming rhododendrons and a big maple tree on my left. So this is my home office for our conversation, even though where I wish I were was in my home office 7 miles, 10 miles from here, where I'd be looking at our veggie gardens and our chickens running around the yard. But this will have to do for today.
Well, you are not my first guest to call me from a parking lot. And many of us find ourselves in our cars for various reasons, sometimes just hiding. So tell me what you were doing when the pandemic hit.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I was actually on a film shoot. This was February 20th, so this is early into the pandemic. I was with my film crew, and we were spending 2 days with one of our subjects, a wonderful man up in Olympia, Washington, and we were spending the time with his family and him. And four of us ended up getting really sick, and we finished the shoot, but within days of that shoot, all of us were down for the count, and at least for four weeks. And of course, at that time, there weren't tests that we could get more readily available. And so we just rode it out, but definitely had kind of the respiratory issues.
So you think that that was likely an early cases of COVID?
Well, we thought, because as the month progressed through March, we were wondering, of course, at that point, we were under lockdown, and we thought we had been quarantining ourselves since February 20th, not because of even thinking that we had COVID, but because we were so sick, we just weren't leaving our homes. Turns out, actually, I did get an antibody test just a week ago and tested negative. So whatever we had, it was a beast, but we didn't have that. That being said, we were all pretty isolated from February 20th on, and including my husband, because my husband was helping out on that shoot. So we've been living in our quiet little rural homestead for months now, without a lot of contact with the world.
So tell me about the documentary that you were working on. It's titled Unfixed. And you were interviewing people who have extreme chronic illnesses, which is something that you yourself also are dealing with.
Exactly. I decided that I needed to find people that were learning how to thrive with what they had. And this came about from my own struggles. I spent about 2 years pretty much stripped away from the identity that I once had known, feeling confident in my body, feeling confident in the way I moved through the world. And that isolation and confusion around what I was experiencing, which now I know is called a condition called MDDS, Maldade-Debakement syndrome is the longer term, but it's a neurological condition that is basically makes you feel like you're constantly on a boat. So like right now I'm sitting in the car and the car is kind of bobbing up and down a little bit. And it goes from varying degrees of gentle seas to wild turbulent seas. And it just throws people off in every aspect of their lives, as you can imagine. And so it's taken me 5 years to really adapt to these sensations, and they never go away. It's not something that you can lay down and, oh, yeah, it's better. So anyway, I got to a place of feeling so alone in my experience of this. And I thought, after exploring all the different possibilities of fixing it, which is more my MO, I've got to find the right doctor. Witch doctor, healer, medical doctor, neurologist. I went to everybody. And when I couldn't find a cure, I first fell into a deep state of grief. And then somebody told me one day, what would it be like to live with this for the rest of your life? And I didn't like that suggestion, but it's planted a seed in me. And when I was ready to start watering that seed, I allowed myself that possibility of what it would be like to move through the world unfixed. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, then I need to find some people that are doing it. So I started just searching, and they came out of the woodworks. It didn't take very long. This started last September of 2019. And within a few months, I had over 50 conversations with people from all over the country, including a few people in the UK who wanted to share their own stories. And by no means are we all like, you know, we're unfixed and this is great and we're waving our flags. It's more of how do we do this every day? Mm-hmm. And some days it feels broken, and some days it feels like we can hold gratitude alongside the brokenness. And it has been such a rich journey. And then you add the pandemic. That was not expected. That was not part of the film plan of getting into people's lives.
Right. It never is part of a film plan.
No.
But it's so interesting because you went from trying to connect in a way that was in person, doing these interviews and getting to know these other people who were contending with their own chronic illnesses, and then having to stop that and pivot into another way of gathering and of telling these stories. So I'd love for you to talk about that, because I've, you know, gone online and looked at what your project looks like in its current iteration, and it's really beautiful and special, and I think it has so much to teach people.
Well, thank you, Danny. I do feel like there has been some blessings in this. First of all, so there are 20 people now that are in what we're calling the unfixed community. I don't really like to call them subjects because it sounds so clinical. So I talk about them as, well, my friends, members. So there are 20 of us, and prior to the pandemic hitting, we already knew that we were going to do some self-recorded videos. But alongside that, we had a production calendar where I was going to be traveling to a number of these people throughout this year. All the way, we had things booked all the way through October.
And all over the world, all over the country?
All over the country. For now, we had all over the country, but all, you know, a lot of them were on the East Coast, and that was going to involve 2 or 3 day film shoots with a larger crew and just, you know, following them around in their lives and having interviews. And because that's not happening, alongside the self-recorded videos that we were already planning on doing, we are only doing the self-recorded videos. So every month, on the first of every month, I send out an email with a prompt, questions that relate something to like chronic illness and what their experiences are. We are into our fifth month now. And because of the pandemic and because I'm not on the plane traveling all over to some of these people, we are just going into the stories with a little more depth. And I actually last month asked them to create some B-roll alongside their self-recorded videos. And they're getting quite good at turning the camera out and filming their experiences of life. And what I'm really realizing is that it's forcing me to be less of a leader and show up more vulnerably with all of them. I mean, that it actually, it just brings tears to my eyes because I feel like they're letting me into their hearts in a way that I don't think I would have had we showed up with our big crew, and, you know, our fancy gear. And they're coming to me saying, "How are you?" Because they know I'm struggling with my own, you know, brain that likes to bounce around in unusual ways. And so I think they're recognizing that we're in this together.
Mm.
That's been such a beautiful, unexpected part of making this film. Couldn't have scripted it.
Can you give an example or two of what these prompts have been?
Yeah. Well, last month, the one I invited them to share some B-roll alongside their interview was to just talk about what a good day is like and what a bad day is like. And knowing that those terms are very subjective, and, you know, how do we hold those experiences together? Because to some, a good day really may be a bad day, and vice versa. So we explored that concept. And for me, it's some of our participants have invisible disabilities. And so it is especially interesting to see, okay, what is it like? When I look at you, you look totally normal. So can you show me with your camera what you're experiencing inside of your body right now? And it was so beautiful to receive, you know, shots of screens with rain behind them and the screen kind of muddying the scene, or someone else took electrical cables and put them together so that they created these shocks. And that was our subject in Olympia, who has a condition called trigeminal neuralgia, and it creates these lightning bolt shocks in his brain. And for myself, I always do them too, to share with them. I put a piece of plastic monkey in a jello mold, and I shook the jello. And like, this is on a bad day. I feel like I'm a monkey inside of a jello mold that's being wobbled around. And this month, I'm looking forward to what they share. I just sent out the prompt, and I want them to talk about their caregivers and or their friends, family members, neighbors, anybody who has shown up for them in a positive, loving way. And I feel like I definitely don't want to ignore some of the negativity that is part of living with chronic illness, but we have a lot of that in the world right now. And I thought, without sounding too cliche, we need more love in this world. So let's hold our hearts in gratitude and think about the people that have really been there for us. And what did they do, and how did they do it? And I think for me, the biggest lesson in all of this for myself has been learning to love the difficulties, learning to love the unpredictability, the uncertainty of my own condition, and then expanding that outwards into my community and other people that are experiencing suffering, and holding it in my heart, allowing there to be room for all of it. Growing up as a, you know, perfectionistic ballerina, I didn't have a lot of room for the ugly stuff. So peace happens for me in my heart when I stop resisting the difficult stuff.
Oh, that's such an important thing to say. And, you know, I'm struck too by what you said about what is a good day for one person might be a bad day for another, and vice versa. And I'm wondering what you think about the way that contending with a chronic illness and sitting in the question of what would it be like if this is it, right? If this is the way that you're going to be living the rest of your life. What does that do during these times? I mean, I've found myself thinking a lot about, you know, people who were and are sort of emotionally really unprepared for the challenges that we are all globally living with, and people who somehow have had more resilience or sort of muscles for it, which of course changes day by day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's just one fixed way of being. It seems like it's two steps forward, you know, one step back for everyone. But is there anything that you and your community talk about in terms of dealing with these challenges during this challenging time, which is like an overlay on top of the challenges that you were already contending with?
Yes. Well, you know, we did a video on coping during COVID. It was our COVID-19 toolkit. And I didn't specify, how are you mentally coping? How are you physically coping? How are you spiritually coping? I just let them speak from their own toolbox, because they've all had to learn to contend with uncertainty and unpredictability in their own lives. And they're experts in a lot of ways. And so it's a great question, because I think we can be turning towards people with chronic illness right now and saying, how do you do it? And so, you know, we got a really mixed bag from a lot of mental health, working with your thoughts and positive thinking and self-practicing self-compassion. It was a huge one. And joyful thinking, finding moments and things to be grateful for in our lives, and balancing that out with what is real pending in the moment. Like I said earlier, it's like being able to hold gratitude in one hand and pain in the other, and allowing those both to coexist. And then we have our resident comedian who says, you know, humor has to be a part of all of it. Otherwise, everything is too depressing. And he has been living in isolation for over 10 years with a traumatic brain injury. And it was a professional photographer, world-renowned photographer. And has his approach is humor. I mean, my inbox is filled with jokes from him, and that's his way of coping. Mm. You know, the one that really struck me the most, we had a few members that really talked more about the spirituality and the element of service, and how even in the smallest ways, if we can turn our attention outwards, because we're always going to be suffering on some level. I'll always be feeling this feeling of bobbing up and down, and you know what it does to my nervous system and the anxiety of that. But if I can turn my attention outwards toward my cat or my husband or this community of lovely humans, and how can I care for them in the smallest ways today, or at least show them that I love them, it doesn't make the symptoms go away, but it fuels me and fuels us in such a profound way. So service was something that a few members really emphasized. I mean, the list could go on, but they're all teachers to me right now and to so many more. And my hope is that I could just follow them for the rest of my life. I don't know if that makes for a very good documentarian. I've heard stories that a good documentarian is a bit of a jerk, but I've you know, I'm not following those rules. I've fallen in love with every single one of them, and I care deeply about their lives. So we'll see how this unfolds.
Maybe it'll be a series.
Yes, yeah. I would love that. It would honor their stories in a very profound way.
So my last question for you, and in a way you've been answering it during this conversation, but what's bringing you hope not just during this time, but in general, what feels hopeful?
I love that question. And I've been listening to all of your guests' responses. And I guess for me, I reflect back onto what I've experienced these past 5 years and how through suffering and through the darkest night of my own soul, I was able to find peace that isn't as shakable as it used to be. And that was in direct result of the suffering of the agony that I was feeling. And so my hope and what is actually making me feel hopeful is that people are quieting down and listening to these experiences of sadness and grief and loss in their own lives and the lives around them. And I feel like we're all getting heart surgery in a way, and our hearts are expanding to allow more breath and more space for this experience of being human, as well as the positive and the good. And we want it both. But I think if we're afraid of this, the yuckier stuff, then we can't have compassion for it in another. And so I'm hopeful that we're all going to come out of this with expanded hearts that can hold it, hold the bigger picture. Yeah.
That's really lovely. Oh, Kimberly, thank you so much for talking to me today and for sharing wisdom, because that's what you have. And I'm looking forward to seeing Unfixed continue to unfold.
Oh, that's beautiful, Dani. I love that. Me too.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Way We Live Now. Tell us the way you're living now. We want to hear. Call us on, you might want to get a pen for this, 909-713-8995. That's 909-713-8995. And record your story, and we might just use it on the pod. Also, you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/thewaywelivenowpod. We are creating a community here, and we would love for you to join us. You can find me on Instagram at Dani Ryder. The Way We Live Now is a production of iHeartRadio. It's produced by Lowell Brulanti. Beth Ann Macaluso is executive producer. Special thanks to Tristan McNeil and Tyler Klang. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.